our friend Franny Faith, who I haven't seen in a very long time, but she's such a dear person. She put out these couple of these great CDs. One of them is Bring Up the Vibration, and you heard the title track, Franny Faith, Bring Up the Vibration. I'm very pleased to say, Ann Safi Biasetti, do you want me to use that, although your full name?
You don't have to. It's fine to say Ann Biasetti is fine.
Ann Biasetti, thank you.
It's a long one, I know.
No, it's not. There's, look, you know, I have guests here where they're in different languages.
Yes, that's so, right. Exactly, you know, yes.
They're really tricky, and I'm apt to stumble, you know.
Yes.
But I'm not a real linguist, you know.
That's right.
Some people, I hear them, like, say the pronunciations of all these mantras and things, and I'm like, it's got, you know, and then you have to say in a certain intonation, especially if you're speaking in a different language.
That's right.
When I ask a lady, how do you pronounce your name? She'll give it the Spanish inflection or something like that. I go, and then I attempt that. I don't want to do it wrong. Yeah.
That's right.
So, Ann, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Gary. It's a pleasure to be here. Really an honor, actually. So thank you.
Yeah, I know you're usually working, right?
Yes, but this I took a nice self-compassionate week off to rest a little bit and to come here. So
thank
that
you.
Was great.
Well, I'm happy to share your book and Befriending Your Body. I got a great deal out of it, and it's something I'm probably going to continue to work with. I'm going to set it up now so people understand what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Those who struggle with disordered eating often find themselves in an unrelenting cycle of harsh self-judgment, painful emotions, and harmful behaviors. Seeing the body as an adversary, these patterns can lead more people to become withdrawn and isolated. Ann Biasetti's A Powerful Holistic Approach to Liberating People from Disordered Eating focuses on self-compassion and embodiment. This insight, informed by yoga and mindfulness meditation, views the body not just as something to be healed or restored, but as a source of great wisdom and knowledge. Dr. Biasetti offers yoga-based movement, body awareness practices, meditations, and journaling exercises to help release long-held habits of self-criticism and perfectionism. Her step-by-step program will rebuild self-compassion, self-love, body awareness, acceptance, and connection to the self and others. Ann Safi Biasetti, PhD, LCSW, has been a practicing psychotherapist for over 25 years and is licensed as a clinical social worker. She is also a certified yoga teacher, yoga therapist, and mindfulness and self-compassion teacher trainer. And your website is?
Mm-hmm. AnEmbodiedLife.com. It's AnEmbodiedLife.com.
AnEmbodiedLife.com.
Yes.
I want to talk, first of all, want to go right into embodiment.
Sure. I had a feeling you were going to ask that question.
You can bring the mic closer if you want.
Sure. Because, you know, I had a feeling you'd ask that because, quite honestly, that's probably the question everyone asks, you know.
Oh, boy.
Is kind of like defining that term. So
yeah.
It is a philosophical term. Basically, it comes through the door of phenomenology, which really means using our sense awareness and our sensory awareness to live a fuller life. So I always like to tell everyone that if we can think of the way we're born, you know, babies are born, actually. We're born with this embodied knowledge because we don't have our higher brain capacity formed yet. So what happens is we're living through the door of sense awareness constantly. We know when we're hungry. We know when we're full. We know when we've had overload through our environment.
Yes.
We know when we need more stimulation, when we need less, you know, and all of that comes actually through like nervous system regulation and through our sense doors, right? And what happens is when our higher brain forms, we go toward rational thought to try and figure out the world, right? We go through cognition, our thought processes. And not that that's a wholly bad thing. However, what I really try to emphasize is that it's when we leave out one from the other. Okay. So when we leave out this sensory knowledge, we actually have left behind a huge door of awareness that could assist us in a gigantic way. And so when we just try to think our way through life rather than not just feel through the emotional door, but feel through the sensory door what our body's informing us of, we unfortunately leave out a huge amount of knowledge and wisdom. And that's really the premise of embodiment, is how do we use the body in our life as a source of wisdom, as a source, actually.
I like that.
As a beautiful source, yeah.
Yeah, it's very important for me. I asked that question partly because it's personal.
Yeah.
Because I'm really working on having embodied awareness.
Yes.
Really, really taking care of myself, listening to my body.
Yes.
And responding.
Yes.
In whichever way that is.
Yes.
And I also know that some of us, we use the body for our own pleasures in spite of warnings that it may not be healthy for us.
Yes, exactly. And that is actually when the mind is driving us, whether it be through desire or wants or past experience, and that's what I mean about that disconnection. So the mind may be driving you in one way when the body's telling you something different. And it's interesting because I find with even for my clients that don't have any kind of disordered eating, that come like their 40s, 50s, when injuries start to happen, is when we're usually forced to recognize the body, when we're usually forced to become embodied, whether it's recovering from something or,
perfect,
or we have a health condition or something gets sprained or broken or what have you. That's when people are kind of forced that way. And what they find out is that, oh, gee, I haven't been living connected to what my body's telling me for a really long time. And I always say that's late information. It's never too late.
Right.
We can certainly gather this information a lot earlier.
Yes. Coming from my own experience, I treated my body as if, as far as food, I could do anything.
Yeah.
Eat anything whenever I wanted. But back in the 70s, the lady I was married to, she got a cervical cancer, but it was a precancer. So it wasn't nothing needed to be operated on at that time. Mm-hmm. So we had a couple months to do with choose diet. Mm-hmm. So I chose, we were on a big adventure. We were macrobiotics.
Mm-hmm.
She got healed, mm-hmm. and that became a big adventure for us. And she started cooking macrobiotically. I started teaching shiatsu massage and all that. I mean, it was a big adventure, And so we ate this lifestyle, and we had people coming to our house for classes and whatnot. It was all really great, and I would invite teachers coming from Boston because that was our connection.
Yeah.
So we became a study house in a way, But that ended. She didn't want to cook anymore, this macrobiotic lifestyle.
It was a little too extreme.
But I loved it. I loved it, but it is, anytime it is an extreme. And even if you really look at even some of the old time, even the macrobiotic people, they had problems.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great point, even to speak to, again, when people are say in recovery from any kind of disordered eating, or let's say just really, really anyone. What I always encourage is because what's so popular now is the cleanse and what have you. People using smoothies and shakes and this and that, and it's not that I'm against those things. All I say with it all together is if that is what internally feels good. So there's a question that I ask in the very first chapter of the book, which is, do you feel healthy? Do you feel strong from the inside out? So not through your mind, not through, oh, this shake tells me I'll be healthy, or this macrobiotic diet.
How does it feel?
Exactly. How does it feel? How does it register in your body? And that that goes to a much deeper sense. It actually goes even to a brain level, right? Because when we start asking those questions, we're actually talking about this very important concept of what we call interoceptive awareness, meaning, what do things like my heart rate feel like actually maybe after I eat a bunch of sugar,
Right.
Or what is my head? Do I feel clouded? Do I feel clear? Am I thinking clearly? Those are all these internal questions that the body's actually giving you all this information about. So, I don't know, maybe someone feels really great on a vegan diet, and then maybe someone really feels very tired and weak. because they're a little bit anemic maybe, and they don't feel so great on that. So, you know, these are all very important questions to just consider, rather than taking things from the external in, is what I tell people.
But you won't help them dietary wise with telling.
No, I won't, because no. I'm not a registered dietitian.
Right.
As a psychotherapist and as an embodied somatic psychotherapist, what I do is I help all my clients try and find this new relationship
okay.
with their body. And that's really what I call it. And that's, you know, hence the title of the book, Befriending Your Body. It's like, okay, rather than this thing left behind you or that just catches up with you eventually, how about we take it alongside us
yeah.
and use it for our life information?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, in later life, you know, here I am. And a diet, a food has become a factor.
Yes.
I can't, because my body is not being able to do the things to, you know, I was able to, it's not able to handle what I put, you know, these days.
That's right.
It's not happening.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm having repercussions over some foods that I eat. You know, I'm feeling the effects of it.
Yes.
And so I have to make adjustments.
Yes. And that's what it really comes down to, is kind of fine tuning it that way. But less through the door of constantly thinking about it, but rather through the door of sensing it and feeling it, you know, sensing it, saying, you know, hey, you know, that left me feeling really strong, even though, you know, for people that are in recovery, what happens is that there are certain foods that they've taken out of their life altogether, you know. And so when they're reintroducing these things, a lot of times I say, well, is that a food that you really felt great with? You know, did your body really feel healthy and strong with that food? And was it pleasurable and this and that? So why did you take it out of your life? Did you take it out of your life because your mind told you
right.
to take it out
yeah.
or because your body did? And most often it's because the head is saying that's not a good food,
yeah.
you know, and there's no good or bad.
You can listen to your body.
Yes,
what is your
right.
How does your body respond
that's
to that?
Right, exactly. And you know the truth.
How does your digestive
yeah,
system
that's
respond
right.
to that?
Exactly. That those are the questions. Those
that's
are
how
real,
I really
yes.
know.
Those are really the questions.
Yeah.
And you know, the truth is, I know for myself, like if I have something very sugary, you know, late into the evening, I can't sleep. So
right.
I know that it wires my body. So, you know, at this point it's like, well, you know, I'll limit that to an earlier time frame, you know, rather than late, because my body doesn't like it late at night. I actually use those kinds of words, not I don't like it. I actually say, well, my body doesn't like it, because, you know, I like that ice cream at 10 o'clock at night, but my body doesn't.
And here's the rub, Ian Biasotti,
yes.
our guest, Biasetti, I'm sorry,
uh-huh.
Befriending Your Body. Here's the rub, that a lot of our eating is more like emotional.
Yes.
A lot of our eating.
Yes.
I know mine is.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's hugely connected. And that's actually what embodiment is about as well, is how do you start to recognize how emotions land in your body too?
My emotions yeah. meaning, oh, I, you know, it's like a retreat. It's like a reward.
Yes.
Like I'll do, you know, after I do a radio show and I'm out, I want to reward myself. Like,
yes.
oh, that was great radio today. And what am I going to do? Oh, I get some Cheez-Its.
Yes. yes.
Yeah, I've now befriended Cheez-Its again.
Well, you know, but what you're saying is such an important, even if we go back in time and understand food as communion, right? That food has always been actually about connection, right?
And
unfortunately, we've pulled the pleasure connecting experience away from it, and we've used it as an isolating panacea, you know, for emotions a lot of times. And if we can understand that when we're not feeling so great, or actually when we are feeling so great, part of what we're looking for is really just a connective experience in that moment,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
that's where I tell everyone, well, let's see if we can get another connective experience. Maybe that's the time to call a friend and say, I had such a great radio show today, you know, or maybe it's a time to sit and be
just
a little contemplative.
I think being a little contemplative
yeah.
is the answer for me. And for instance, like, I don't get hungry when I'm up doing radio.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't have any desire for snacks or anything.
Yes, you're so engaged.
Yeah, so engaged. Now, you know, where if I go off on a trip somewhere, yeah, right? A lot of times, right? I spend a little time on the ocean or something.
Yes.
You know, I'm just, yeah. I feel, by the way, I feel like being outdoors is really, really good.
Yes. Yes,
and
it is.
And the body is really responds to that.
That's right, because you're using all your sense organs. Yeah. And now, I love to tell a little story of, and because this is the difference of what happens with our higher mind and how we lose this. But, you know, many years ago, my daughter's now 16, but when she was about 7, 8, I took a little walk with her, and we were walking along in the woods, and there was a, you could hear a stream up ahead. But, you know, in my adult mind, I was pretty preoccupied, and I was into our conversation. She was the one that stopped and said, "Mom, do you hear that sound?" And then as we got closer, she's like, "Mom, can you, the air is changing." She goes, "It's cool here."
Yeah.
And then we finally approached the stream. So she was engaged in all her sense organs in this beautiful, very present way, because that's what happens with embodiment. If we can really pay attention through the sense door of what's happening around us, we're immediately drawn into presence, which is mindfulness.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, this is a good word, mindfulness. Yes. It's used a lot.
Yeah, it's like the new McDonald's. That's what we
I remember
say.
It started out as a Buddhist term,
yes,
right?
That's right, yeah.
Now it's just a present. But it is a very good thing to yes, contemplate. What is mindfulness?
That's right. In the moment, yeah, present attention without judgment. That's the simplest term.
I used to, I had Sharon Salzberg on, and she wrote a book about mindfulness.
Yes,
you know,
yeah, she's wonderful.
Yeah, and I wanted to, it's really that simple. We don't want to complicate it. It is really awareness in the moment.
In the moment, yes. And really
being mindful of.
Yes. And without the without judgment part is a big one. So in the Buddhist teachings, right, we talk about mindfulness as there's two wings to the bird, right?
Right.
And we say mindfulness is the one and self-compassion
is the other.
Yeah, because if we're presently aware,
okay,
but judge it, criticize it, well, then we've lost all the awareness.
We've lost, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a big piece of what I talk about in the chapter that includes the mindfulness is that if we don't couple that with a self-compassionate understanding of what we just became aware of, then unfortunately we haven't learned anything,
Let's talk about self-compassion.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a biggie.
It is a biggie. It's a biggie. It was a biggie in my own life for a long time. And I think the first time I was guided through a metta meditation, you know, the tears rolled and it moved my heart so much that I was like, I need more of this and I have to understand more of this. Yeah.
You know, I think some of the ploys that we use not to be mindful, not to have self-compassion, is taking a look at outer circumstances, other people, how we're affected by that, and reaction,
yes,
reaction to that,
yeah,
feeling victimized,
yeah,
feeling someone else is to blame,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
takes us away.
It does
from really being aware, loving her. Okay, let's talk self-compassion, mm-hmm, because these are two different terms.
Yeah,
it takes us away for settling into ourselves and really taking a look.
Yeah.
And then looking, oh man, you're really hurting.
Yes.
You know?
That's right.
This is all coming from internal pain.
That's right. Exactly.
And you don't know how to handle it.
Yes, exactly.
And it's very difficult for you.
Yeah. And see, like those words that you just said are beautiful, self-compassionate words, because self-compassion is really taking a look toward ourselves and having the wish and holding the wish to alleviate our own suffering. So the same way that you would if you were sitting next to a friend and they were sharing something so painful with you, and the same wish that you would have to reach across and maybe hold their hand or hug them or even just say, I wish I could take this away from you. You know, just having that wish and then turning that towards self is what self-compassion is. It's holding the wish, even if you can't in the moment escape the current suffering, it's holding the wish and the want to do so.
I like that.
Mm.
And I also like the word willing.
Yeah, that's
the wish,
big piece.
The whole thing. Are you willing to take a look?
That's right. That's right. And that's the hard part, you know, because when we're in the midst of something really, really tragic, you know, suffering, or like you said, something in the past that has happened to us, a lot of times it's like we don't want to look to that. Like you said, we want to look toward the person who hurt us or the story of it. And we really don't want to look toward, wait a minute, I don't want to take care of this for myself. Somebody else should have done that for me. And it's a really hard thing to rise above. It really is. But the way I ask everyone to look at it is that if we're constantly holding on to that, we're actually not living in the present, you know? So what happens is self-compassion actually offers us this beautiful moment in the present to actually reparent ourselves, to refriend ourselves, you know, befriend ourselves, like I say.
Yeah.
It offers that in the moment. So in many ways, it gives us a lot of self-agency. It gives us a lot of ability to pick up and go forward. And that was probably the biggest finding in when I did my research, you know, on self-compassion. That was the biggest piece of it all, was that not that this was some kind of great magic in the recovery process here, but what the magic was that it allowed people to take the moment and respond in a different way.
Yeah. Instead of so you can respond in a different way once you see the way you are responding is not helpful.
That's right. And causing more suffering. Yeah. Embedding all of that more.
Yeah.
And embedding that story more.
Sometimes I'll get triggered emotionally, and I'll fall into a spot that I don't want to be in.
Yep.
And it's like, I don't want to be here. You're trying to, it's like you're in a big paper bag and you're trying to fight your way out.
That's right.
How can I get out of here? And maybe if I tear this bag and blame somebody, the anger comes out. You know,
you're
just like, someone is the cause of this. Someone had to be the cause for this.
Yes.
You know, it's not me.
Exactly. And that's the hardest thing. I think, you know, in one of the chapters I talk about that, this, you know, facing yourself piece, you know, and like, no one wants to do that. You know, that's the hardest one. And I actually start off by saying, can you please just take a moment and understand how hard that is? I'm asking you to do something really, really hard right now. And we have to be compassionate just for that. You know, that facing ourselves rather than going external and blaming or, you know, finding the cause, even just the fact that we are suffering and we're looking at that is hard enough, you know. So we say we take self-compassion not to get rid of suffering, but actually because we're suffering.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why we use it. You know, we use it because we're in pain, not because necessarily, oh, it's going to help us magically get out of pain. I do believe that the practice over time does that, but that's not initially why we're practicing it.
And it's something to do daily. I mean,
absolutely.
Well, your life, actually.
Absolutely.
There's no like, I've reached the point where I won. It's not about it. It's a daily thing.
It's a
lifelong.
That's right. It's a new I ask people to look at it as really a new relationship with yourself, a new relationship with life. And the beauty of it is, because this is, you know, the components that make up self-compassion too, the beauty of it is that when you start living that way, then you automatically start seeing people in a different way too. You know, I tell everyone it's a lot easier now when I'm in a store or something like that and someone is acting really rude or something for me to gather, you know, first of all, curiosity, and then to gather the phrase of, wow, that person really must be suffering with something.
Yeah.
You know, to be in that direction.
So to be able to see that.
Yeah, it's a lot easier
now.
And
not to blame that person for being an a-hole or whatever.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
You know, I mean.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I go into just judgment thing at times.
Yes. It's human, of course.
Yeah. But when I can move into appreciating the suffering of that person. I'll give you an example. There's where I live in Schenectady. I'm on the top floor, and I sit out on my deck on my porch, and it's you know, I have pillars around. It's really nice. I grow plants out there and sit out there.
Yeah.
Hang out. And I look out and I see people on the street walking by, et cetera. And I this morning, I saw this kind of a, you know, how do we describe it without sounding like I'm judging a person?
Mm-hmm.
A very burdened looking woman, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, with two kids. And they're all like, and I remember like this one little kid, like screaming, walking down, crying, and her mother just like criticizing her, you know, and ostracizing her in a way. And heart went out to,
yes,
to the kid,
yeah.
but not to the woman
yes.
who was giving.
That's right. That's right.
So today, this morning, maybe being influenced by reading your book, Befriending Your Body, and this woman was overweight, you know, I had compassion for the suffering
yes.
that poor woman is going through.
That's
and
right.
to be able to do what she's doing,
that's right.
at least to the degree that she still has her children. They
that's
haven't been
right.
taken away from her.
Exactly. Exactly.
She's still, like, you know, doing the best she can.
That's right. And you know, isn't this the truth? You know, I said recently in one of my classes, I said, you know, if we all walked around with a big, you know, cardboard sign on us that said, this is hard, without even knowing what the this is, you know. But the truth is, we all have a this, right? We all have something that's hard that we're dealing with. And it varies on what degree, right? To what
yeah.
degree, how hard it is, right? But we all have it, you know, and that's the I find
yeah.
that that's what the self-compassion definitely has done in my own life. It has made me able to kind of see that in somebody else a lot sooner than I ever would have, and certainly a lot sooner in myself, for sure, without a doubt.
You know, I like to bring myself into these interviews.
Yes.
Because I think it's grist for the mill.
Yes.
I think it helps everybody.
Yeah.
And it's kind of therapy for me.
Yes.
but, you know, I mentioned it before that I have a friend that I talk about.
Yes.
Talk with about everything,
yes.
you know. And then I had to, because we're friends. But we've been getting closer, like, more and more, because we've been trusting each other more and more.
Yes.
We've kind of, like, had to see, and doubting the trust, too, especially on my end that I see. And because, of, like, you know, my projections of things the way I thought our relationship should be or
yes.
whatnot. But she's still there, and we're still in that, and now we're taking it to a more of an intimate level of trusting.
Yes.
And so to the point where I had to really, like, come clean about, like, what I was really feeling when I said something on the phone on a message that sounded like, why did you say that? You know, like, that would cause separation.
Yes.
Because I was distrusting. I was thinking, you know, like, oh, this can't continue, you know?
Yes.
And why did you say that? Then I had to explain it all. And then I realized, and I finally came clean on all my feelings of fear you know, and it's really not about you, and this goes back.
Yeah,
and
which is really wonderful.
It's really not you, and so we had a good talk about that, and now I know, I have no doubt now. Maybe it'll come out again, because I'm a human. Maybe
yes.
doubt will still come out.
Yes, it will.
Because
yes,
I always want to say, oh, I won that. That's over with. But it's a process.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that's, I think it's just a beautiful unfolding, like you shared, that, you know, to be vulnerable like that
yeah.
with our emotions, and to finally just see that and
yeah.
acknowledge that,
yeah.
that's really, when we talk about
human
humanity.
It was me, and I claimed it all, you know?
Yeah.
I really did, and I wanted to, too, and
yes.
it had to happen. It was the timing, you know?
Yes, and it's great, and you know, the question really is, and how did it feel to be so honest and real and vulnerable like that?
Well, it did feel great, but it brought out the sadness.
Yeah.
And so I've been kind of feeling a little, the sadness all came to the surface.
That's right, which usually happens, you know?
You know,
and that's where I say to everyone then.
So now I'm alone with the sadness.
That's right. And, you know, but this is like the perfect time then to
yeah.
embody. Right.
Yeah,
to say,
right.
where do you notice that in your body?
Right.
You know, what's the sense experience of sadness? Can you even notice where you hold it?
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
that kind of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
Then,
yeah.
And then that is what keeps us present focused
yeah.
and less apt to go external and reach for external things
right.
to take
right.
care of that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, life is work, you know, and it's great, yes. But it's work, you know.
It totally is. It totally is. And that's why I say, you know, a self-compassionate path is the human path.
I think I took a step in self-compassion.
A huge one. Yeah, that's a huge one. Coming to vulnerability and our human vulnerabilities like that. You know, someone once asked me, a client of mine once asked me, is there ever such a thing as being in a relationship and not feeling vulnerable? I'm like, no. Bottom line, no.
I feel like, why is this happening to me at this later age in life where I have less years to enjoy the rewards of, but hey, okay.
It's never too late. It's never too late to change these things around, right?
Thank you. Ann Safi Biasetti, yes. The guest, Befriending Your Body. We're going to do a short station break.
Sure, thank you.
Panama City, Florida, 1961. Police arrest a drifter, Clarence Gideon, for breaking and entering. Clarence cannot afford a lawyer, so he asks the court to appoint one for him. The judge says the state doesn't have to pay a poor person's legal defense, except for a capital crime. So Clarence has to represent himself. He's convicted. From his prison cell, he submits a petition for his freedom, written in pencil, to the United States Supreme Court. The court sets Gideon free. Legal representation, writes Justice Hugo Black, is essential to a fair trial. The right of one charged with a crime to counsel may not be deemed fundamental in some countries, but it is in ours. These are your constitutional rights, a project of Yellowstone Public Radio and Montana's American Civil Liberties Union at aclumontana.org.
You know, I was just speaking with Ann a little bit, you know, about when you do our self-compassion, sometimes like the sadness will come up and it doesn't always feel good because you're bringing up this stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Which you really haven't been dealing with in a long time.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, a lot of these harsh criticisms, if we really look at them, they're actually there, like, attempting in a very unhelpful way to help ourselves, okay? Like, in other words, when we criticize ourselves, it's this idea that, oh, if I keep reminding myself of this stuff, you know, somehow this inner stuff will pass. And that's actually not the truth. Because as we know, when we criticize ourselves, we don't even get to the level that you just got to, which is that level of sadness that's underneath it all. But instead, when we're kind to ourselves and allow ourselves to be human and vulnerable, we get to the truth. So I always tell everyone, self-compassionate is truth-seeking, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're breaking through, you know?
Yeah.
Breaking through.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when you break through, if you can continue to be kind on that level and gentle, you actually then can heal rather than just keep covering it up.
Right. Mm-hmm. And let's get back to the healing disorder thing, because this is what you do.
Yes.
Your work.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and I think a lot of people going through this, there's some healing, eating disorder involved, because your body, you know, is going to reflect what you're going through.
Yes.
You know, and let me ask you, instead of saying that's the way it is, what is the cause for most healing disorders that you find?
For most disordered eating, you mean?
Yeah, disordered eating.
It's very what we call multifactorial. So there's so many avenues. So I like to, you know, right now, the most recent research, especially the research that I follow the most, is the neurobiological research, because I just think that's so important to understand kind of how we come into the world.
Yeah.
So we do know that there are differences in the brains of those that eventually develop this type of addictive disorder, you know, to food, and then distortion in body perception and things like that. But as we also know, the environment either can support or can help, you know, keep at bay certain genetic expression, you know? And so there's a lot of causes, but we do find that certain people are more predisposed just by the nature of how they come into the world, you know? So I do, I'm actually going to be talking about this at the Saratoga Library in a couple of weeks, things like prevention. And if we look at young children and prevention of this sort of thing, what I say the most is, can we look to when we're feeling really anxious? Because children all go through periods of anxiety, but we find that at the end of the day with disordered eating, that anxiety is such a primary driver. And there's a lot of avoidance. You know, people want to avoid when they feel uncomfortable with anxiety. So I always say, like, when children are feeling very anxious, can we look at that point in time to introduce them to things that actually keep them connected, keep them embodied? So now there's this beautiful movement, you know, in people teaching yoga to young children and mindfulness in the schools and taking children into nature, you know, see at the most you can to keep them grounded in their body and teach them stress reduction techniques from the inside out. And those are really wonderful pieces that actually that's what I work with all the adults on is how will you, once you break this behavioral cycle around harming yourself with food and these behaviors, how do you then alleviate your anxiety? We still have to go there. We still have to find out a way to do that internally. So with it, we don't reach for other things externally that could be self-harming, right? It makes no sense to get healthy and change up these behaviors with food and then start reaching for alcohol or start reaching for something else, right, you know, that could be harming, you know? So we really want to break the need for some source outside of ourselves to help ourselves, you know? Right. Now, that doesn't mean sometimes people need some medication involved that's prescribed, you know, at a proper dosing. So it doesn't mean that we don't involve that sometimes as well, because that's the self-compassionate thing too, is understanding if someone tells me I've been an anxious kid since I was five, since I could remember, you know, I may say to them, well, you know something, maybe we'll see what methods we can do holistically. And then maybe the most compassionate thing is to add something with your doctor a little bit in there, you know, and that's okay too, you know?
But this brings me to where when people, when do we discover that we can actually love ourselves?
When
did that come
in? That's a big one, I think.
You know, because I think about somebody, you know, friend said to me, do you love yourself? I'd like to say, oh, of course.
Yes.
Then I think of all the negative thoughts I have about myself.
Yes, that's right. Exactly. Exactly. What is love, right? Yeah. You know?
What is love? You know? Yes. You know, I think, you know, the very fact that you're here, I think we don't recognize how much we really love ourselves because we have it, we're blocked to it.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And this is where we say, you know, in my field, you know, of clinical work, I think that that was always like a big buzzword is, you know, you have to love yourself first and all this kind of stuff.
You read it in your book.
And that's right. And really what I'm saying here is, you know, especially when we go through something, if there's trauma in our lives or we go through something that's that that really what I call fragments the self, you know, really leaves us feeling pretty broken, which is the first title, the first chapter, title of the first chapter, feeling broken.
Great chapter.
You know, and so when we have something like that go on, quite honestly, people are left feeling like I can't stand myself right now, let alone love myself. And if we keep using that term, it makes people feel hopeless because they feel so far away from that loving themselves. That's why actually loving yourself is the last chapter in my book, right?
Right.
Because I talk about, all right, can we just forget the love piece right
now?
And can we just deal with liking ourselves and learning how to like ourselves? Maybe we can just go there first.
How about people, you know, couples?
Yeah.
You know, I love you. I love you.
Yeah.
You know, that's okay, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I love you.
That's right. But you know, do you like me?
Do you like me? I think it's better. I really like you.
That's right. That's right. I find that actually more appealing.
The love thing, you can throw that
out.
Right. You know what I mean? I mean, it's common.
That's right. Exactly.
But it's nice to say it to somebody. It's nice to hear it back.
That's right. That's right.
That's fine. I love you.
That's right.
Because I think we practice it by saying it.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. We do. And that's where I do encourage people, listen, if you have affirmations like that, you know, that you want to add in daily and all that, that's a great thing. Go ahead and do that. However, self-compassion, I liken it to the more practical end of things. You know, I liken it to the end of self-compassion makes you actually do something. You know, we can say I love you, but then there's not a lot of action behind it sometimes. Yeah, you know, it's the liking part that actually creates action, right? Because when we say, you know, I like you, then there's the internal feeling of when I like you, I want to do for you.
And you can take it to yourself. You can ask yourself, Gary, I can ask myself, what do you like about yourself?
That's right.
Gary, what do you love about yourself?
Right.
Let's forget about that one.
That's right.
Because then I'm going to come up with, it's got to be big.
That's right.
Why can't it be small?
Exactly. And that's actually what self-compassion is too. Yeah. And, you know, because the truth is we're all on, and this is the humanistic view. This is actually the transpersonal psychology view, which is what I have my doctorate in. And the transpersonal psychology view says we are on a path of growth and self-learning for a lifetime. You know, the further reaches of human nature. That was Maslow, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
We're always on these further reaches of in human nature. And if that's the case, then quite honestly, there's always going to be things that maybe we're not so crazy about within ourselves, right? And that we're saying, but, you know, I aspire to having this be a little bit different, you know, within the next number of years, or my intention is to shift this in my life, you know, but there'll maybe always be something that we're not so keen on, and that's okay. You know?
It's okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's even okay not to like things about yourself.
That's right. Of course. I said, I always laugh. I said, I get pretty edgy. I always tease everyone. I'm from Queens. I grew up in Queens, New York. I'm going to get edgy. You know, I'm going to get fiery at times. Like, okay, that's what it is.
Being human being is a messy business.
It's a messy one. Yes, a very messy one. And that's the issue is that, you know, just speaking of that, you know, the personality trait of those who tend to have eating disorders too, or develop eating disorders, perfectionism is a giant piece of it.
I know about that.
Being perfect and trying to be perfect. Mm. So what happens is when people enter the recovery process, they want that to be perfect too. They want it to be linear and straightforward and to keep going and to have no mess ups and no mistakes, and it's just not going to happen. It's messy. And that's what I write in there, that recovery. And I even invite people to read the book that way, right?
Yeah.
I said, don't, you know, if you read the book straight through, that's fine. But recovery doesn't go that way. Go back to chapter one or go back to chapter five, you know, because there's going to be moments where you fall back into all of those kinds of struggles again, you know, and to let it be a messy process,
because be
that's what it is, you know.
That's right.
Recovery is really messy. From anything.
This book is published by Shambhala.
It is, yeah.
Great.
They were amazing to work with.
They publish a lot of Buddhist books, right?
Yes, they do. They do. And I was really, really honored to have even my proposal read by them and they took a chance, you know, with me because they're an excellent publisher.
And you have a lot of practices in this book.
Yes, filled with practices.
This is really about experience.
It's
about experiential. It's about doing.
Yes.
You know, it's about taking that chance, doing the practices, find that, go down that road of recovery, you know?
Yeah. I wanted to offer a practical, you know, because again, the way I teach and through the lineage of what the book is based on, which is the Buddha Dharma, is experience-based learning. So I wanted the book to be experience-based and after each chapter to have someone be able to engage experientially in exactly what I'm trying to teach. And because that's, to me, the way we embody and learn,
you know? And, you know, and I really like, this is the life we have. Why? Let's not worry about the next life.
That's right.
This is the life.
The
next life will take care of itself.
That's right. Let's get this one. Let's get this one a little good. Yeah.
Somebody, years ago, somebody was very highly intuitive. He was in my show and he goes, Gary, he says, you've come to this life to get it done now. Get it done one lifetime. I go, what pressure? he goes, you're going to choose like the hardest relationships, the toughest.
Oh, that's great.
You know, and he turned out to be right.
Uh-huh.
the ones where you're going to really have to really grit and really get into it, get into the nuts and bolts of the situation.
Yeah.
I need to, it's sort of like you need to be tossed around tops. You know, you need to find yourself.
Change up that karma, huh?
And I found that to be true. You know, I'm not gliding, at all.
Exactly.
But I am enjoying my life.
That's right.
I'm enjoying it all as it is.
Yes. And I think, to me, I don't know, to me, if we're really in it and truly living, that it is going to be challenging. It's supposed to be challenging. We're breaking through those, scars, we're breaking through those patterns and those cycles, and we're, breaking into something new takes a lot of effort and time and patience. Yeah.
Right.
Hard work. Someone wrote in, one of my participants gave me a great quote. She's like, this isn't just hard work, it's elbow grease. And I thought that was the best. I love that.
And it's great to come to you, for people to come to you. Your beautiful, self-compassionate approach with people is very obvious to me.
Thank you. And
you've been a psychotherapist for 25 years, you've seen a lot of people. A lot of people trust you. Tell us a little bit about if people, what do you recommend? Where people go to see a psychotherapist? So often people, we don't have people in our lives that are trained, professional enough to really get what we're going through.
We
really need to sort it out. We're not beating, whatever diet we choose, it's not happening. Mm-hmm. When a person comes to you, they've already recognized to a certain degree their helplessness.
That's right.
Because they've been grasping at straws So finally, they get to talk with you.
Yeah.
How do you guide them through?
Well, I always tell them first off that, just giving me a call or reaching out with an email to me or any other therapist is actually the first act of self-compassion, isn't it? Because I talk about that in chapter 2. How do you let someone in, help you out, So there's a certain amount to talk about vulnerability. There's a lot of vulnerability and surrender and saying, I think there's something wrong, and so we kind of start there. I love for my clients to guide me into their world, right? So, because I'm not sitting there on the other end saying that I know exactly what you're going through or I know your experience, because even though I feel like I very fully understand the eating disorder recovery process through this self-compassionate door, everyone's experience is so individual. So I really want to meet someone where they're at, and we start there. So like I've said to parents sometimes of younger people coming in to see me, I said, I know they want to move along quickly because the parents are scared and concerned about them, just like any loved one would be. I kind of say, I really have to stay with where your son or daughter is at for as long as they need to stay there. So this is going to take time, So really how I work is with a lot of patience. Sometimes clients come in and they say, are you sick and tired of hearing me say the same thing for, all this time? I'm like, no, because to me, it's always something different. Because to me, I know their experience is that, I have the same problem or I'm stuck in the same thing. And I don't ever hear it or see it that way, because I see something in their body or I hear a different word, that's my job, is to point out how actually little changes are taking place that they're not going to see initially, but I can see it. And in the midst of any suffering, it will feel as if it's got to be totally gone for us to live our lives again. And that's the main point of this, is that no, you are making shifts and changes that are developing your freedom, even if some of these things are still in your life bogging you down. You just need that pointed out to you. So that's my role, is to point out, the enormous, actually, steps that are taking place when they still see the darkness, Like I point out, I feel like their light and the shifts that are taking place before they can see that. And that's why that professional help, I think, is so important.
Exactly. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You. You also talk about, let me read, self-agency, which refers to the experience of influencing one's own life, and that you have the ability to influence your physical and relational environment. Your actions and intentions have an effect on the world and elicit responses from those around you. Think about this for a moment. Up until now, eating disorder behaviors have produced a certain result. The disorder has influenced the world around you. The behaviors affect others' emotions and actions toward you and yours toward them, whether positive or negative. It's important to understand this influence and to begin to work with it.
Yes, yeah.
I like that self-agency.
Yeah, it's a really big piece.
To begin with yourself, it's a big piece.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the time. We got about 5 minutes left. But what is your website?
It's, on there is, again, www.anembodiedlife.com.
Anembodiedlife.com.
Yes, and, right. And it's A-N. People sometimes get it confused with my name. Anembodiedlife.com, Anembodied Life. And there I have like articles on there, you know, that I've written, things like that. And so people can go on and kind of look at all the other work I do too, you know, as a yoga therapist as a psychotherapist.
I wanted to ask you before we leave, is your specialty is eating disorder?
Yes, but I also work with a full range of other issues as well. People come to me for life transition issues, depression, anxiety,
A friend of mine, she tells me about seeing her therapist.
Yeah.
I know she was seeing a therapist for a specialized thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, is this for that? When she talked about her therapy, I'm going to see my therapist. No, she's a general therapist.
Yes, that's right.
Just life issues.
Yeah, life issues. Transitions are a big one. You know, listen, this world of relationships are not easy, you know? And this is where I say, you know, listen, we start with, the relationship with ourself, and then we move on to one of my teachers in self-compassion said, you know, we should add in that relationships were the other major struggle in being self-compassionate, right? Because they're hard, you know? So yeah, this self-agency, you know, going back is about ourselves, but it's also about then the relationship with others, just such an important piece in the healing. And that's why people should seek out the help. It's about the relational experience.
It's all about the relational
It's all about it.
The experience.
Yeah.
Tell us about where people can see you, where you're going to be doing. You're going to, you said, mention Saratoga Library.
Yes, I will be doing my first book signing will be at Northshire in Saratoga.
Northshire.
Yes, and that's on the 7th of September at 7 p.m. And that would be great. I'll be talking actually
that's
about
Friday, right?
Yes, and I'll be talking actually about the research behind the book, which is
Springs.
Yes. And then on Yoga Mandalay on Sunday, the 9th, I'll be doing a sacred women's circle.
Oh,
so that one's just for the girls.
Yeah. Okay.
And that one is going to be really talking about the cultural aspects and women's bodies in relationship to culture.
Okay.
And
just a
really interesting perspective that I looked at in my research
it's big
as
for
well.
Women. It really
feminist
is.
Perspective it, looking at this.
We,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
From my lady friends, I understand that.
Yes, absolutely. And then Saratoga Springs Library is on Wednesday. I believe it's the 26th. And it's an educational program on eating disorders and prevention treatments.
Befriending your body. Thank you, Aunt Safi Biasetti. AnnEmbodiedLife.com.
That's it. Thank you, Gary. Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Thank you for being with us.
Thanks.
Cue the music, right?